Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Dr. Laura Brenner is awesome. She is giving doctors permission to change their minds on how they approach their dental careers. She practiced dentistry for about 10 years, but 3 years into her dental career, she realized that chairside dentistry wasn't really for her. It took her another 7 years to make the choice to finally walk away, and now she's giving other folks permission to rewrite the script and find a new path in dentistry. She does this through her coaching work, her side hustle at gigs, Facebook group that she supports folks through, retreats, also supporting others in dental life coaching. She just has a variety of different ways that she brings so much value into the dental industry. And her constant message is that you have the permission to change your mind, to pivot, to drop out of dentistry altogether, and just really create the life that brings you joy. And that is what she primarily does in the dental space. And she's just an absolute delight. She's got so much courage. She's so strong. She's got one heck of a story. And I'm really grateful that she's allowing people to take a look at whether their current life works for them and giving them the guidance on how to move forward fearlessly as you make these decisions. And I just really like her. She's just such a great friend, and she's always brings so much meaning into my life. And every time I talk to her, I walk away feeling better and most importantly, feeling seen. I'm really excited to introduce to you my friend, Dr. Laura Brenner. Dr. Laura Brenner, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental. I'm so excited to have you on. As you know, I just absolutely adore you and admire you, and you've been such a beautiful person in my journey over the last few years. And every time I'm with you and have conversations with you, I just, one, I get so excited that I'm going to have them with you. And two, they're always so meaningful. And I love how even after just a little bit of small talk, we can like hit the heavy really fast. So I anticipate the same for this conversation. And you have such a unique and incredible story. And what you're doing now in the dental industry is really awesome. And I don't know, let's just kick it off with what was your claim to fame, which was this famous post on why your dentist hates you, which was a big, nice slap back to all the folks that complained about the dentist. So I don't know, let's just start there and tell us about the trajectory from there.
Well, I also want to start and say thank you so much for hosting me here. I love you so much. We have the best conversations, and when we get to record them, it's going to be even more juicy. So thanks for having me. And as far as this blog post goes, well, so I'm going to go back a little bit to set the stage. I practiced dentistry for 10 years. And in year three, I decided that I was very unhappy and I didn't like doing it. And I wanted to quit. I wanted to do something else. And I couldn't find my way out of dentistry. I had invested a lot to be here, and it wasn't something that people did. This was in 2004. And so because I didn't know what to do, I had to really look inside, and I had to do a lot of soul searching. And one of the things that came from it was I started blogging because I needed a creative outlet. And you know, it's funny because I worked with a career coach, and I remember saying to her, I feel bored and I feel boring. And to feel boring as a person is kind of sad. It was such a sad place to be. So I realized there was some need for some creative thinking in my life. And I ultimately started this blog where I was writing about food and travel because I was just doing it for fun, no strings attached. And one day I found this blog post titled 10 Reasons I Hate the Dentist. And I was like, okay, honey, here is a reply to you, and it's 10 reasons your dentist probably hates you too. And I actually wrote it and I was laughing the whole time because hers was kind of a joke too. And so mine was in that same spirit. It was fun. We were joking. And I sat on it until I totally left dentistry behind. And when I ended up quitting, it was about a week later, I rewrote it, I posted it, and overnight it went viral. And my phone started dinging and going crazy. And I just was so excited that somebody was listening to what I had to say. And the people who were so excited were everyone in dentistry, not just dentists, but dental assistants and hygienists and parents of dentists and spouses of dentists. And they were like, thank you for speaking up for us, because we're so used to hearing how everybody hates us. And we're always so good. We're so good to others, and as we should be. But there is a feeling of we don't ever get to say what we really want to say. And so it was a nice release for everybody all around the world.
Yeah. And I love it because I didn't know that you, you know, wrote the blog post. But when I first met you and you had mentioned it to me, I was like, hell yeah, this is great. Because even as a coach, you know, I see the other side, right? And I mean, you lived it, obviously. But I see it in the heartbreak and the pain and the stress that a lot of doctors go through in running their businesses or being associates. And I mean, the variety of things. And out in the public, even as a coach, right, so many people will say to me, why do you work with dentists? You know, and there's just this like, what? You know, and even my hairstylist, I can say this because I'm sure she's not listening to it, a dental podcast, but she's like, girl, why? You know, and she just like doesn't understand. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's like this stigma that's out there. And people even judge me being in the dental industry, right? And it's so bizarre to me. And I don't totally get it, because dentists are often the superheroes in a lot of people's lives, and especially, I mean, in a variety of ways. So yeah, bravo to you for clicking send or publish or whatever it was. And then as a result, you then now support doctors in finding these alternative paths, right? And how to live a life that feels really good for them. So I'd love to hear a little bit more too on your experience and just learning, I don't actually like being a dentist. I think that's really powerful, because I do hear that too as a coach, people regretting ever getting into the dental industry. So do you want to share a little bit about what brought you to that conclusion and how you navigated that?
Yeah, well, there's an interesting culture in dentistry. It's like we marry this career. It's for life. We're lifers. And we marry it without knowing it. And without knowing ourselves, because you have to choose this career, and then you spend all the money, and then you go through all the work to figure out if it's for you. And you've invested so much that if you get here and you don't love it the way you were supposed to, you can't imagine a way out. And that's what happens to so many of us. And it's very different from other careers. Other careers, they don't have that same time and identity investment or even the same dreams that it's going to provide. You know, so many of us choose dentistry because we want to have very impactful careers and lives. And so it's very hard when you have to face that. And the reality is not everybody loves this. And we create this false narrative that we're all going to love it. And take any job. We're all so different. Not everybody loves every job. So that's really what happened to me. And I couldn't see my way out of it. I spent a lot of years. I practiced for 10. I mean, the first three, I knew it was going to be hard. So I was prepared. I was like, I know this is going to be hard. I just need to grit my way through the hard stuff. And then it will be fine. And then I'll be great at it. And everything's going to be easy in life. And year three came and it didn't get easier. I got better. I got better at all the things you're supposed to get better at. And my skin was thicker, but I didn't feel better. And then I kept saying, well, maybe in year five, I'll feel better. And finally, by year seven, I was like, I'm losing my mind. You know, I had so many feelings of wanting to leave, but shame around it, and I couldn't. And it was a lot of pain. It was a decade of really I call it a chronic low-grade depression, like a cloud hanging over my head. But because so many of us are so upbeat and we try to be positive, we hide it from ourselves. So you grit your way through it. You try to be perfect, like we all do. And then you get to a point either where you keep going your whole life, or in my case, I was like, I can't do this anymore. You couldn't pay me enough money to live this way. And recognizing that I had to change, I saw that there was no support. Nobody was talking about this when I went through this. When I started in 2004, people weren't even really talking about burnout the way they do now. Burnout really came into fashion, I'd say, in around 2018, 2019, and then 2020 just exploded burnout. But what we knew about burnout was, I'm too young to be burned out. So it can't be that. I must just hate what I do. And well, maybe there's both or a combination or one or the other. They look so similar. Burnout and being unhappy in your career look almost the same. So you have to figure that out. But there was no support. And I was so ashamed and felt like a failure. So when I figured it out, I really felt passionate about sharing that with others. When you go through a pain and you feel like you can create a solution, it's really fun in life to be passionate about the work you do. And so I'm very lucky that choosing dentistry, I thought was going to give that to me. And I think so many of us choose it because we want that passion and we think it will give us that. And that's kind of what kept me going, this idea that I want to love my work. I don't want to settle for saying, oh, well, work is work and nobody likes their work. There was always, yes, I believed that at times, but there was always that little dream in my head that was like, I want to love my work. And so ultimately, just it kind of happened.
Yeah. And so when you got to that point, I mean, what was it like when you finally decided I don't want to be a dentist anymore or work chairside anyway?
It was terrible. I'm not going to lie. It was so hard. It was so hard because you feel like a failure. You're having to change everything you've learned. You're afraid. Like, I was scared of the money. And it was really my husband who was like, you need to do something about this. You cannot come home every day crying. And I didn't even realize how my misery was bringing him down. We sometimes were in so much pain, we can't see the people around us. And so that was, I always joke that it was an ultimatum, but it was really permission to do something. And so even then, it still took me a long time. I needed to get out of my way and I needed to give myself permission. And that's the process I help people. That's a huge part of the process I help people with in my coaching.
Yeah. And then were you the primary income for the home or no?
No, my husband's a chiropractor, and this is interesting. He owns his practice, and chiropractic practices are very different from dental practices, but in some ways they're similar because they're like a private practice with a different healthcare spin. And so actually, I call it my bridge career. What actually got me out of dentistry, I don't know if you know this, Brandy, was I did weight loss coaching.
I did not know this about you.
Yeah, I completely left dentistry, completely. And I started doing weight loss coaching, and I was able to open my weight loss coaching business within his chiropractic office. And I think that's a great thing for people who want to do something different and we're not sure how to move forward. And it seems so scary to start a business. It was like, why not use your resources to make it easier for you? So he had a front office, and, you know, it was a series of events that it was the opportunity fell in front of my face, and I had to be available to see it. And it was kind of like a franchise model type of weight loss program. And I was very interested in nutrition. So I was following a path of something that I really liked a lot. And, you know, using his office as a container for that business just took away all the fears and made it possible. Otherwise, I don't even know if I would have done that.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking from the income perspective, because I know for some people, they feel very trapped, you know, like if they are the primary income for the family in the home, where getting that permission, you know, from your partner or spouse to say, yeah, if you're really unhappy, please you know, choose something different. And I think a lot of people get caught in that. And with your coaching, I know that's a lot of the work you do is helping people with that transition or the side gigs, right? Helping people find some purpose and passion outside of dentistry if dentistry isn't what lights them up. But how do you approach it? Like if somebody really wants to get out of dentistry, but they have this obligation, you know, financially, do you come across that a lot with the people that come to you?
All the time. And this is why I love the side gig. This is why the side gig is such a vehicle for what I do, is because most careers do not have that option like dentistry does. You can practice dentistry, depending on your circumstance, 2, 3, 4 days a week, allowing you extra time to plan something else. And I've studied all the other people in our profession, and the people who have non-clinical businesses that they own or even non-clinical jobs, they all started out as a side gig. And they built that up while they decreased dentistry slowly, slowly over time. And that makes it safe so that you can still have your income while you're building something else. And the hard part is sticking with it. So that's where a lot of that mindset work comes in that we do along the way. Because if you don't have that, then it's very easy to stick to your old beliefs that say, well, I could never make enough money doing that. And this would not be good because I'd have to check emails on the weekend, or whatever reasons we make up that something isn't going to be good. It's usually because of fear. And so everyone's different. Some people actually are fine financially, but they have so much fear that they just can't even imagine it or see it. That was me. Like, we had a life where we didn't have kids, and the way we lived was we would be fine. And yes, we had to cut somewhere, but you know what? It was so worth cutting these things to feel better. It's like, sometimes we're so attached to the golden handcuffs that we forget to ask, what is it costing you to make this money? And when I left, actually, there were a few jobs I took during dentistry, like practicing dentistry, where the one job I was making one-fifth of my normal income. That was not a lot of money as a dentist. So I was like, well, I'm not making money here. And then when I left, I felt like I had so much more money. Because I didn't, it was a mindset thing. It was like, I didn't feel trapped. When I was in practice, I felt like I had to hoard everything because I knew I was going to want to retire in 5 years or whatever. So I wouldn't allow myself to feel free or spend my money. And then when I actually left and let go of it, I never worried about money. So there are real circumstances. Let me be clear here. There are real circumstances where we need money. There are certain people who are the breadwinners, but sometimes I find there's a little more give than what we think there is. And what is it costing you to be so attached to this specific amount of money?
Yeah, I love that, because you're talking a lot about like the energy exchange. And I think people don't really consider how money is energy. Right. And when we're so locked up, like you're talking about it, the flow, right, the exchange of that energy gets very convoluted or trapped or constipated, for lack of a better word. And people don't realize that when you're in that open flow state and you're in that place of generating, right, where you're, instead of like being really restrictive and constrictive, like you're talking about, like, oh, you know, I got to hang on to everything because I don't feel good. And then when you open up and it's sort of this expansiveness, you attract so much more. And I know too, even for me, like, you know, with coaching for what feels like 100 years, you know, I've coached under people, alongside people, you know, in coaching agreements and companies and stuff like that. But when I took the leap to go 100% on my own, even that was a big aha. And I had to have somebody walk me through that. And when I share this story a lot, but I had one of my mentors, and she was saying, you're so clear. Like, you're so clear on what you want to do. Like, you know exactly what you want to do. Like, why aren't you doing it? And I had this fear around money, you know, that somehow, and she even said, she goes, so just to be clear, you have a belief that if you do something that you're really passionate about and that you're really good at, you're not going to make any money doing it. And I was like, yes, I do. And then she's like, do you know other people that do the kind of work you're looking to do that make money? And I was like, yeah. And she said, okay, so you also have a belief that they can do that, but you can't. And I was like, yes, yes, I do. And then just like walking me through those beliefs, I got to see how silly I was being. And speaking to your point, I was also responsible about it, right? So I had my ducks in a row, so to speak, you know, financially. And I wasn't just like, that's it. I'm ripping the Band-Aid off. Woo. You know, here's to nothing. So I did have stuff set aside. I had a plan. And I also approached it, and I don't know if you do this, like with the folks you coach and work with, but I also had to sort of coach myself into like an experiment, like, hey, this is a trial. And, you know, I said to my husband, I want to do this. And if the needle doesn't move in a direction that seems positive, and I give myself a 3-year time limit, I said in 3 years, I said, if it happens before then, okay, you know, I'm not going to put us in jeopardy. But if it's not moving in a positive direction within 3 years, then I'll pull the plug. And this is just something that I wanted to try out and a risk I wanted to take. But at some point, I want to take a chance on myself. I want to take a risk on me and see what's possible, see what I'm capable of, see what this is all about. And it was great because as soon as I went fully in and invested on myself and went all out, I mean, the needle started to move pretty quickly in a positive direction. And so that was great. But I think too, you know, when we say we're going to end a career, so to speak, our minds can get into catastrophic thinking and like, this is going to be it forever. And you can say, well, I mean, you can always go back to practicing dentistry, right? At some point, if you catch up with all your license or trainings or whatever, you can go back, you know. And I say that to hygienists too, that are looking to make a switch, right? Same thing. You can always go back, kind of thing.
You know, I kept my dental license for 10 years. Sometimes I think people misunderstand me that I'm like, oh, the money doesn't matter and you have to do what you love and find your passion. And it's not that at all. Yes, that's a piece of it. There is a piece of growing past those beliefs that you were talking about with the money and can I do this? There is that. That stuff is so important. And being safe about it is so important too. I'm never walking people off the career cliff because it's just, why would we do that? We don't have to do it that way. And so, you know, I see people walk off the career cliff. People will reach out to me and they'll say, I quit my practice a month ago and now I need to figure it out. And then they don't even know where to begin because they feel even more trapped because they're not bringing in income. But if you do it while you're bringing in the income, you work on your mindset that helps you be happier where you are. And, you know, there's a thing I love that we always think that the more success we have, whenever we hit a goal, that's when we'll be happy. Mm. And it's actually the other way around. There are studies that show that happiness comes before success. So if you can become happier in your work, maybe you're not that happy in your work, but you find ways of coping and becoming more positive and changing yourself from the inside out, then you'll start to be happier. You're going to open yourself up to start having better ideas and more space to think about what you can do next. And then you're following that formula that happiness comes before success. We just have it backwards because that's what we're taught.
Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written 5 drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person. Or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over, and wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue. And you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. Yeah, I was just having a conversation earlier today, and I was reminded of, you know, there's this whole idea of, you know, there's conversations when you talk about religion or something like that, like heaven and hell, right? And a lot of people think, you know, well, if I struggle now, you know, I'll get a great pass to go to heaven when this is all over, you know, and that heaven is full of this bliss and everything's okay there and stuff like that. And there's this idea that what if we decided this was actually heaven, right? And I know most days, if you open your phone and look on social media, it just certainly does not feel that way. But this idea that what if you created this, you know, mindset that this is heaven on earth, like this is where you get to make those choices and you get to create, and why not create that bliss now, or just decide, wow, this is amazing, you know, or just really take a moment to appreciate what you're actually doing. And even, again, I like to approach things with experiments because that's my personal hack that like lets my mind do stuff. Like, all right, Brandy, what if you really don't believe in it? Like, let's just try it out, you know, for a day or a week or something like that. And it lets me just play around with it and see how I feel, because I can get into very black and white thinking. So if I do a little mindset hack, like that makes a big difference for me. So I really like what you're saying in that too. And what do you think has been the biggest mindset shift you see with the folks that you work with, that, I mean, I guess how they come in, and then what's the shift that you see?
You're going to have to remind me if I forget, because I want to say this is really funny. Yesterday I was on one of my group coaching calls, and I was just started going off on, it's just an experiment. Just think about this life as an experiment. Everything in life is an experiment. So it's funny that you're saying that. Yeah. So the mindset, right? So people come in, the biggest thing I hear is, because dental school was so specific, I have no other skills. So they can't even see how amazing they are. And I'm always shocked that this career, and it did it to me too, this career that is so hard, takes so much skill and talent, and only the best people can do it. I can't believe that this career makes so many people feel badly about themselves. It's what we all do. So there's this lack of belief that people have in themselves. They can't even see it. And I think it's because we get beaten down by dentistry every day and all the things that happen, and back to the patients hating us. And, you know, some people really know how to cope well with that. And those are the people who are happier in dentistry. But some of us, it's like it hurts our heart every day to do that. So they come in thinking that I can't, there is nothing I can do. And the shift that, the biggest shift, and this was my biggest shift, and I actually use an assessment. It's an attitudinal assessment. You've probably heard of things like the Myers-Briggs and DISC, and those are personality assessments that say, you know, you're an introvert or an extrovert, and you're social or technical, and as long as you fit into this box, then you'll do great. But this is your personality. Your personality never changes. The attitudinal assessment that I do is energy, and it's saying, this isn't telling you this is how you are. It's telling you how you see the world, and how you see the world is, can change. So I've learned that through this assessment, there is a pattern of thinking where we start out feeling like we have no options, no skills. So what happens is then we think, why bother trying? And with intention, you can start to believe that, well, and this was how it worked for me. It was, dentistry's hard. Most people can't do what we do. If I can do dentistry, I can do anything. And so that was the mindset shift. I had to see that dentistry wasn't telling me how untalented that I was, that it was actually showing me how amazing I am and how much I could do that most people couldn't. So I could do anything. And that was a shift from a little bit of, I'll say, thinking where you don't feel like you have control over things, into becoming empowered and seeing that there are opportunities everywhere. And when you start to see opportunities, it's a huge mindset shift, because what you realize is that the opportunities have been here all along. You just didn't see them.
Yeah, that's a big one. And do you think a lot of that mindset stuff starts in dental school? Because I was out at the International Conference for Doctors in AA, actually. Dr. Brett Kessler had invited me out there to attend last year. And I was sitting with a gentleman that had been sober for a really long time. And there were dentists were there, but there was a variety of doctors there. It was open to all. And we were talking about the differences between like dentists and MDs and the difference in mindset and the competitive nature and the comparison that a lot of dentists experience. And this doc that I was talking to, he was an oral surgeon. And he had, you know, experiences in both industries and was saying how in medical school, you do rounds, you know, with your fellow students and there's this camaraderie and this collaboration and you bounce ideas off each other. And there was this general kind of support. And in dentistry, you know, in the first couple years, yeah, but then in your last couple years, there's this competitive nature where you're really, they're pinning you against your fellow students. And then when you graduate, it's like there's a lot of comparison going on. And there's, because I've noticed that this sort of comparison from one dentist to another, and a lot of dentists are comparing, you know, skill level, how rapidly, like, folks they graduated with from dental school, like how rapidly they're advancing in their career, whether financially or skill level or, you know, buying practices or building or whatever. There's just kind of everyone sort of eyeing each other and comparing themselves to one another. And I think that can add to sort of that tunnel vision that you're talking about, like, oh, this is what I'm trained to do. This is what I'm really good at or not good at, right? And that can sort of eat away at self-esteem. And I know just even in some of the stuff you talk about is how you build your business and design your career. Like there's one right way. And then if you do it any other way, like you're failing or you suck, you know, at dentistry, you should be playing full out and going hard and don't ever work part-time. And I mean, there's just this mentality. So I found his insight, I mean, I thought it was pretty insightful for me, but where do you think some of that mindset comes in? Do you think it starts in dental school? And is that something people need to deprogram once they come out? Or what do you think?
I think it absolutely starts in dental school. And I mean, I think it probably really starts before that. I think it's bigger than dental school. I think it's society. I think it's culture. I think we're all taught that the more money we make and the more we're respected and the better we look, you know, to others, then the more successful we are and the more worth we have. And I think that is maybe it's American culture. I've always sort of assumed it was just life, that everyone's that way. And I would love to see, I feel like when we look at this as the culture of dentistry starting in dental school, that feels so much more doable to me, that like we could actually change that culture. I think about when I was in dental school, we would make fun of the teachers that we didn't like. Usually they were hard on us or mean to us. And so I think it was a defense mechanism, but we would make fun of them. And what is the saying? Those who can't do, teach. Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't stand that saying, because that saying, sometimes it's a joke, but when it's not a joke, and a lot of times it's people aren't saying it as a joke, it is so destructive to our ability to say, I'm going to define success on my own terms. Because if you're taught every day in dental school that your teachers aren't as good as private practice owners, then you're going to come out. And if you decide that you love teaching and that fills your heart and you're so much happier doing that, you won't allow it, because that will mean that you're a failure. And it's dumb. It's just dumb. So I like to share those kinds of thoughts. And it would be so great if we could spread that messaging and more of it through our dental schools, so we can get them early and get them to see that a lot of these beliefs and rules that we have don't really serve us.
Yeah, it's so exhausting, isn't it? Like just the homogenization, what the word is, of like just us as a people. It's like everyone has to have their foot on the gas, going hard, playing full out, more and more and more. Nothing is ever enough. And I just look around and I'm like, oh my God. And it wears down the soul in so many ways. And I don't know, maybe just because I'm getting older and hopefully wiser, but it's like I'm just looking around and I'm just like, oh my God. And I kind of yawn at some of this because it's the same. same old stuff, you know? It's just you go to the conferences and it's the same old stuff and you're just around, you know, the bro circles of entrepreneurship. It's like, yawn, I get it. We've all heard it, you know? And I just feel like there is a subtle shift going on in how to live life and what truly is the meaning, quote unquote, of success. And like you're saying, everyone has their own design and blueprint and fingerprint essentially on what it means. And I'm so rich in relationships and essence and connection. And we're in an epidemic where people feel so isolated and so disconnected. And I don't have that. You know, I really truly feel very connected and there's so much depth in my life. And that fills me up in such great ways. And it's helped me to navigate in a lot of spaces where that isn't valued because it's like, well, that's what's important to me. These are my values. And when I honor my values and I feel very connected to them, that is where, like you're talking about, that confidence and clarity comes through. And a lot of people will look and think I have it together. Okay, maybe five people think that. But like when they look and they think, oh, Brandy's got it together, I think what they see is just that like I'm rooted, you know, because I don't have it together, obviously. You know, we're all dealing with stuff and there's always areas for improvement for sure. But I think when we say, oh, maybe she has it together, it's there's a confidence or something like that. But there's this assuredness. This is what I stand for. This is my life and I'm good with it. You know, and I think that's what a lot of people are missing because they're in that chronic chase, you know, that's outside of ourselves, like you talk about.
Well, it makes me think of the word abundance.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
So often people think of abundance as only about money. But mm-hmm. what I heard you saying was there's an abundance of so many other things in your life. And that's relationships and connection and purpose and things you love. And abundance of knowing yourself. Abundance can be used for everything. And when you expand that definition, then it sort of feeds itself. You start to see it more. And one of the things I love about abundance and the topic is that when, like, looking back to when I said when I was making a lot of money and I felt so much scarcity because I was scared to spend my money because I felt like I had to save it. When you, like, scarcity is, we would say, is the opposite of abundance, right? And so you could have an abundance of money, but if you are scared of losing it, you're in scarcity.
Yes.
And if, right? Yeah. And if you're obsessed with having more of something, that obsession is, I'd say, a little stronger than just wanting, but that obsession is you in scarcity because you're wanting something that you're not seeing that you have. So you're lacking. Yeah. So yeah. I just think it's a fun topic that life just gets better when it's not just about the money and you can start to look at your deep connections and the sense of purpose that you have and the happiness and the joy.
Yeah. And I find, you know, obviously I work with people from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, but majority of people that I work with, you know, have a lot of cash flow. Let's put it that way. And I've noticed too, you know, and I've been in a lot of those circles where then life becomes, you know, a fear of losing it, you know, and then managing it. So you get to this certain level of income and it's something that you've always wanted. Like, oh, when I get to this, you know, number metric, you know, I will have made it. You then become obsessed with not losing it. And then how to manage it properly and how to maximize it and how to get the most from it. And then it becomes like that's the latest obsession. And even in the sense of you saying, well, I don't want to spend it. And I'm kind of like, you know, wanting to hang on to it. There's, yeah, this chronic fear of, well, will it go away if you don't do that inner work, right? And where you're not really recognizing the bigger purpose or create a new purpose in your life, like something that's much deeper. So how long have you been away from practicing dentistry now?
Ooh, I cannot believe that I've been out of dentistry longer than I was in. I practiced for 10 years, and this last November was 14 years out. So actually, okay. if you include dental school, now I'm even.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I can't. Yeah. But you know what, Brandy? I remember every single pain. everything. It hasn't gone away. All those pains haven't gone away. I don't know why. You could say it affected me in some way.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like you have no regrets. No regrets looking back.
And yeah, I love that you asked that because so many people think, will I regret it? And to your point earlier, so what? If you regret it, go back.
Yeah.
But like you can't ever change if you stay stuck in it. But if you change and you regret it, go back. But the truth is most people who leave, it's because they're in enough pain in it that when they're able to build a life outside of it, there are no regrets and they're so much happier with their choice.
Yeah. So tell me, what is life like for you these days? I know you have so much going on. So let's just give someone an example of a possible future outside of dentistry. So what is your life like these days?
Yeah. So if I'm telling you my life these days is I feel very grateful that I get to fill my days the way I want. And let me tell you, I work my you know what off. Yeah. It is not like I don't work. I do work. And that's actually something I struggle with right now is that when you own your own business, and I'd love to know if you feel this way, Brandy, you don't turn it off. So it's hard for me to take breaks. And that can be a problem. But it's so nice to feel like I can love what I do. And I actually, because I'm not good at taking breaks, I force myself to take breaks. And you know what? I take a nap every day that I can. I actually will meditate for 10 or 20 minutes and then take a nap for 10 or 20 minutes. So it's usually about 30 to 40 minutes total. I put that time in, and most people would look at that. People who are looking at life in more of a fixed mindset, they would think, ooh, like, how do you do that? Or you're entitled or you're lazy. And the beauty is I don't feel that way anymore. I'm proud of it. I want to share that with you. You might not be able to do that in your dental practice, but what if you can find a way to get close to that or do something that's your equivalent of what you want? And so it doesn't mean that my life is easy and that I don't work ever. I work my tail off. I work all the time. But it feels lighter and different when you get to be who you want. And I love still working in dentistry because I always loved dentistry. I just really hated practicing it. And when I go to dental, you were talking about going to dental conventions. For me, every time I go, it's magical because I get to remind myself that I can still be in this room and I get to be who I really am. I don't have to pretend to be someone else. And that is the gift, is getting to be who you really are. So life after dentistry, when you follow what you want, just feels lighter. It feels easier. It's still real life. You still have problems. You still work through things. But it's almost like, for me, it was going from a life of constant depression and anxiety into now I can maybe have moments where I get anxious about something. But overall, I'm filled with gratitude and joy because I'm not having to live someone else's life anymore. So if anybody is thinking about it, if you're listening, you're thinking, you just, and you want to, there's a reason you want to. So listen to it and you can do it.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much. I always love chatting with you and I feel like we're always on the similar wavelength. So it is very easy to talk to you. And I'm really excited for the work that you're doing and to share you with people who are looking to have different conversations about what's out there. You have an awesome side gig community. You have a really cool retreat that's coming up. So everyone's going to be able to find that in the show notes too and be able to connect with you that way. And for those folks that are out there wondering if there's an alternative path and you feel alone or that something's wrong with you for feeling that way, definitely reach out to Laura because you will certainly be able to help them navigate that. And they are most certainly not alone. I probably talked to a dentist a month that is questioning whether they made the wrong choice. So it's pretty common, way more common than people think. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing, like you're saying. It doesn't have to be either a dentist or you're not, that there are options and you're a great and amazing resource for people in navigating that. So I'm super pumped that we had this conversation. I get to share you with everybody. So thanks for being on.
Thank you so much for having me. You're the best.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices, it's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.